The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
And now, of course, it's one of my favourite bits of the week because it is time for Winners and Sinners. And today we are joined by Saoirse Hanley, features writer with the Irish Independent, and Ger Gilroy of Off the Ball. Good afternoon to you guys.
Hello.
Hello, you're very welcome. I will come to you first of all. Saoirse, give us your winner for the week.
My winner this week has to be, it's a three-parter here. We've got Nila Kovac, I hope I'm saying her surname properly, as part of the My Voice, My Choice campaign, and by extension, Women in Europe. And I'll tell you why. Because Nila Kovac has been campaigning for the last couple of years with a campaign called My Voice, My Choice to enable the European Commission to provide for a pathway so that countries in Europe who might not have access to abortion the way that we do, and say places like Malta and Poland where it's all but outlawed like we used to have it here, that people in those countries who need to access abortion care can do so in other member states, and that they can provide funding via the other countries to get there, which is massive. And it started with the Citizens Initiative last year, and it got 1.2 million signatures. Now it needs a million to be able to progress. And it got to the Parliament in December of last year. They said, yep, okay, no, perfect. It's going to the Commission. It went to the Commission yesterday, and they thought initially it was going to be a no, and they said yes. So now they have provided a pathway for this to happen. Now, it's not perfect. They're still like, they're not going to provide extra funding. So I don't know where this money is magically going to come from to provide for this. But the pathway is there, and member states will now be able to kind of work with that and make that happen. And it's just basically a nice move forward and a bit more security for people Europe-wide. Because obviously in Ireland, we have a huge history of travelling elsewhere for abortion care up until 2019. So I think this is just a nice, when we're looking at things that are happening in the States where you've got, like, you know, Roe v. Wade out the window and separate states closing in on abortion rights and reproductive care, to have, I suppose, a European framework that reinforces that for European women is massive. So a huge, 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 huge congratulations to that team who did it, because it's going to benefit us all.
I think that when we didn't have abortion, and I'm very pro-choice, I think when we didn't have abortion, if something like that had been rolled out to say to Irish women, we feel you, we've got you, the rest of Europe is looking at you and saying we want to help you if you're in a crisis pregnancy situation, I think that would feel very good for the women of Malta and the women of Poland. I know the women of Poland in particular, because they did have access to abortion, yeah, and it's been rolled back. I'm sure none of us would like to see our rights being eroded. None of us would like to see our rights. And rights don't move only in one direction. If you look at places in the Middle East, Iranian women, Afghani women, their rights are being eroded
constantly,
incrementally. And now I suppose the worst place in the world to be a woman is Afghanistan. and because of that. But it wasn't always, you know, it wasn't always that they were head to toe in burqas, etc. They used to be out in colourful clothes, mm-hmm, and the Iranians and the Afghani women have their national dress is colourful and vibrant and all of that. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I just think it is that kind of, whether or not it's going to realistically, I don't know how much it's going to be able to change a lot, because obviously that it does bring up the question of, like, that if there's not extra funding allocated, I don't know where that's coming from, where that budget's going to come from, what it's going to be pulled from to make that happen. So whatever it comes up against, I do think even just the messaging of, like, there's some backup there, there's some support there. I mean, if you think about the countless women who travelled from Ireland even to the UK.
And felt isolated and alone and forgotten and... Yeah. Like they were the country's dirty little secret to be brushed under the carpet.
Absolutely. And now I think it's kind of reaching a hand out to the women who are in Malta and Poland and places where it's not more accessible, and saying that the rest of us are here and we can help you.
How do you see it working in practice?
I don't know.
That's fine in theory, Shane.
Let's dial in the European Commission here if they're available, because I do wonder that. I did have questions about that. The whole Citizens Initiative thing, though, was really interesting. I had never heard of it until last year, that I didn't realise that if enough people in Europe say, yes, we want, because sometimes, you know, petitions go around and you're like, this isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
But for something like this to begin with a petition and to actually end up with realistic change and framework put into place, it's amazing.
They have that in the UK too. And Shane, I'm going to defer to you here because you probably know more about
me. I wish you wouldn't.
Because I think in the UK, if there's 100,000 people sign a petition, it has to be debated in Parliament. They have government petitions, and it's a system, and it actually it's a form of, I suppose, democratic accountability. That if enough people want something on the agenda, you can get it on the agenda with people power.
But isn't that amazing?
Kind of is amazing. 1 million seems like a lot, though.
Yeah. Maybe across pan-European,
yeah, I know.
You know.
I guess it has to be a pan-European issue for it to be debated in the European Parliament. So I suppose that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, we're not talking about a whole heap of money, are we? When you say where's the funding going to come, like it wouldn't be a huge amount to make this work.
No,
I suppose if there's, like, because Europe generally has, like, country by country, we do have decent enough access.
My producer is saying, you're dead right, Kira. It is 100,000. I knew I kind of knew that somewhere in the back of my brain.
Oh, sorry, did I not confirm that?
Shane is frantically Googling. No, he's not. Yeah, but no, yeah, you're probably right, Ger. How much money could it be?
I suppose it's going to be situational, isn't it? Because it's going to be based on the rates of pregnancies throughout the year and whether these countries have them.
Don't we have treatment purchase funds available already? So the mechanism is already there for our healthcare system can't deal with this for whatever reason. That's like a philosophical one in those cases. Maybe. So it already exists, right?
I would hope
we spend money to send people to the north. They send money.
Yeah.
They
spend money. And we send them to Spain and other jurisdictions as well. Did you say jurisdictions when you're talking about health? I'm not sure that you do. But we definitely send them to other countries too that have specific abilities to deal with maybe niche health problems that wouldn't be as common here.
By the way, we do have a joint committee on public petitions.
I was
in the
wondering.
Oireachtas as well. Now, don't ask me how many signatures you need to get it heard, but they do listen and there is a specific Oireachtas committee that handles it and deals with it and discusses it.
Interesting. I wonder if we don't have, we're on the fly here, so I wonder if we don't have a specific number. That's not as good because there's an automatic right to be heard with a certain number in Europe and in the UK. So it'd be quite good if we had that, wouldn't it? Like, you know what I mean? If you had enough people, whereas, we will get to it is a bit vague.
And this forces the agenda.
A
little bit of people power of a Friday. I like it.
Ger, let's move on to your winner of the week.
Mine seems slightly trivial in comparison. You know the massive queues that you're seeing outside places like Bambino, and there's a new place.
Huge today. I saw it earlier.
Yeah.
Listeners, Bambino is a pizza takeaway place in Dublin, very close to Marconi Towers here, News Talk Towers, but it's mobbed
always,
with a monster queue the whole time.
This is now happening all around the country. There's a place in Clare, there's a new place beside Tower Street that's a coffee shop that has apparently signature bagels.
They're
so
delicious.
The TikTok and Instagram, I'm queuing for this thing, is feeding the queues, and it's becoming a massive phenomenon. I'm all in favour of it because it means we can go to the place beside it, which is just as good, and there are no queues there. And
it
is an interesting phenomenon, though, isn't it?
It's mad. It is mad.
The queues in Bambinos are mad, and you know, personally, if I was hungry for pizza, I just wouldn't stand. I have had Bambinos once, and it was perfectly nice.
It's fine.
But exactly. I don't want to slam Bambinos. There's nothing wrong with you, Bambinos.
No,
please send us some free pizza. There's nothing wrong with it. But I've had lovely pizza in many, many places, and I just wouldn't be bothered or arsed.
So the thing about Bambino is that there is another Bambino across Stephen's Green, which you could walk to, get your slice of pizza, come back and rejoin the queue and still
I want
still
to be in the queue. When I last saw the queue and I walked past them all and I had to kind of dart through them to get through, I was like, they do know there's one like 400 metres down
but
the
then road. You're not part of the whole communal
that's
experience.
It.
You're
not that
the
queue. Is it?
But also maybe they don't know that there's one 400 metres down the road.
Is that what it is?
I think it is.
Have to be part of the... I mean, look, it was ever... I remember early, mid-80s. Do you remember those spinners? They were like yo-yos.
Fidget spinners.
And they just became absolutely massive. And everybody in our year had to have them. I remember my mother driving 10 miles to a shop that had them to get them for me. Yeah, like
you're part
fans?
Of a zeitgeist,
yeah,
isn't it?
And you didn't know what the word zeitgeist was.
No, clearly.
Is this tulips? Is this the Dutch tulip rush of whatever year that was that brought down the world economy? Is it?
Yeah.
It's going to be pizza next. And
yeah,
it'll be,
the pizza
it'll
rush.
Be TikTok and Instagram.
It is interesting, though, that herd mentality, isn't it? And all, but is it also that you think, well, this must be the best if everyone says it? It must be. So then, I got to jump on that bandwagon too. I'm the shoe shine
are we
boy.
Missing out on?
Yeah. Does a queue put you off, or would you join it?
Well, whenever there's no queue, I pop in.
Yeah, I'd wait.
Because we're past it every day. All so I'm time. Like, if there's no queue, I'll be like, okay, there's no queue. I'm going to have a slice now.
Put me off massively. I am really lazy and queuing is kind of, no.
Well, I tell my queuing story again.
Go.
I've told you this before, Ciara, but I think of it a lot. A Romanian taxi driver gave me a lift once and we just got chatting. He was a lovely, lovely guy. And he said that every morning he would queue for an hour and a half to get milk. And then every afternoon they would queue for an hour and a half to get meat. And he said...
Back home in Romania.
Back home in Romania, yeah. Back in the Ceausescu era. And he said it was his favourite 3 hours of the day.
Oh.
Because there was such a sense of community. Everybody chatted. Everybody had fun. And then he said to me, now my kids, if they don't get broadband in 10 seconds, they go mad. And I got out of the car thinking, oh my God, one of those slightly humbling life lessons, yeah. You know.
Are we saying that we're happier under authoritarian rule or is that just me?
When there's pizza at the end,
we're just saying, you can find good things in
Well, a lot of people would say the days of the COVID, you know, when you had to queue outside the supermarket and you were standing 6 feet from each other and people would be nodding and smiling.
No, I'm not going. I'm not having that one.
See, I think I'm with the kids. I'm down with the kids on this one that I want my broadband. And I just say queuing.
I will say I queued once for a viral food place in Florence 2 years ago.
A viral food place.
Yeah, it's a nice little...
you get this really bad flu.
I've been in a few places like that over the years.
A lot of oysters, the whole thing. No, it was an affogato shop in Florence that my sister had seen on TikTok.
I've seen it on TikTok, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And we saw that and we went... My mum was in Florence, went to visit her and went there. So, you know, my mum hates a queue. If there's one woman that hates a queue, it's my mother. And I really kind of thought, oh God, we're going to convince her to stay in this queue because it does look nice. We don't know what else to do. It's really hot. We just really want this ice cream. It was amazing.
Really?
Right. It was one of those things where you come out and you're like, that was actually worth queuing for. I'd probably go again.
There is it's just off that square in Rome that has the thing with the hole in the roof to help me out. The
Colosseum?
Begins with P. No, the Colosseum? No, begins with a P. It's in Rome. It has a hole in the roof. The Pantheon. Thank you.
Oh, right.
Thank you. My stupidity.
Far off.
But yeah, it's got a hole. I was summarizing its importance historically. Just off that, there's a really famous ice cream shop and I did queue for that once. But the queue was now about 7 people long, so it wasn't
too
scary.
Acceptable, yeah.
That was acceptable to me. And it was not overhyped. It was the best ice cream I've ever had. It was blood orange and dark chocolate and unbelievably good.
I was walking past a family the other day. I think they were American and we a place like similar that had a huge queue outside and the kids went, wow, it must be amazing. And the mother very kind of cynically said, is it or is it just Instagram?
Wow.
And I thought, actually,
there's something in this.
Listen to your mom. She's probably right.
The food influencer, What Will He Cook, is in Dublin at the moment and he put a call out yesterday for where's the best spice bag in Dublin. And he said that he did this one time before. It might have been in Greece. And unfortunately, the place that everybody recommended was actually rubbish. So now what he does is he goes to the second favourite place that's recommended by everybody and has that one instead. So I was like, well, that's very
interesting. Because it's the first place. It's where all the people who are undiscerning
perhaps
go.
Yeah. Yeah, that hurts. He just said now he has trust issues. So Sansab was actually where he recommended
You took the words Sansab and Drunkandra, definitely the best spice bag in Dublin.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to pause this right now because we've got to take the news headlines.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
On this show, as entrepreneurs, we often talk about the courage it takes to start something from scratch. Every successful brand begins with a vision, a purpose, and someone willing to take a chance on an idea. And while every founder's journey is different, many share the same determination to overcome obstacles, innovate, and build something meaningful from the ground up. That's why I always enjoy hearing founder stories, because behind every product is a real person who has invested time, energy, and passion into building something meaningful. Walmart is helping customers discover products from thousands of small brands while giving founders opportunities to grow, reach new communities, and share the stories behind their businesses. By making it easier to discover these brands, Walmart helps connect customers with innovative products and the entrepreneurs whose passion, resilience, and creativity help bring them to market. So whether you're an entrepreneur yourself or a dream driver looking to be inspired, it's exciting to see more opportunities for small brands to be discovered. Visit walmart.com to learn more about the small brands and founder stories available in your community.
Now, let's talk about sinners of the week. Jerk, give us your sinner of the week.
Well, I do wonder how Patrick O'Donovan feels his week went from a media perspective. So he starts the week at the Drogheda Dundalk game. The Flares are on the pitch.
Tweeting about how, posting about how great the atmosphere is with pictures of the same Flares.
Yeah, that's... You know, life comes at you fast.
Yeah.
By the end of the week, he's been smacked down by the Taoiseach and his underling, Charlie McConnellogue, who's like, well, no, we were never going to blame, we were never going to hold everybody accountable for the actions of a few yobs and tickles, as the minister referred to them.
Plague in all your houses was the term used by the minister.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was a very interesting reaction to be like...
I think we know how he feels because he was on News Talk Breakfast this morning.
Delighted with himself.
And he not only doubled down, I would say he tripled down. He not only did he say he did the exactly right thing, he said that it is his actions and his, you know, sort of strong reaction that has led to the FAI changing their ways, more or less. He's talking about CCTV and sniffer dogs and all of this. And he said that's because he took a stand. So he seems quite pleased with himself.
I'm not surprised to hear that he has no notes on his own behaviour this week. It was stunning. What was really interesting during the week was when McConnellogue came out and was like, hang on a second, what? We're definitely not stopping all of the investment in all of the pitches around the country just because these like five or six people...
Because 10 people acted like yobbles.
Yeah. In the Mail, somebody had obviously... briefed him and was like, well, is McConnellogue on the side of the government or on the side of the yobs? It's an interesting choice of language. I was like, I wonder where the high-powered government source that was feeding this
There was a really interesting text into the show this morning with Anton, and it said, if somebody destroys a playground somewhere, a bunch of yobs, do we get rid of all playgrounds? Yes. Do we stop funding playgrounds?
Yes. And only way they'll learn.
His reaction did remind me, do you remember when you were in school and somebody did something and they came in and the whole class, and you're like, yeah, wait a minute, I was nothing to do with that. It reminded me of that collective punishment that was the last time I was on the receiving end of that kind of discipline.
The other point I'd make is he would never talk about rugby or the GAA like that. He just would not. And then people, of course, when I said that during the week, people text in and said, it never happens in any other sport. I mean, we've had, and I'm not knocking a GAA, we've had instances of GAA games. After the Ulster final last year, there was serious incidents. No politician, quite rightly, no politician was coming out saying, we're actually going to win home.
This morning he made it, just to kind of represent the minister. I don't want to, but seeing as how he was out speaking, he made a lot of his arguments focused in on the 12-year-old boy with the facial burns, and he said, the people that are criticising me now, if the next time it was a fatality, would they still be criticising me? And he said he worked in health and safety because he's an engineer, and he said his reaction was one of health and safety, and he said far too many of the commentary are not focusing on the injuries of that child. And he took a very hard line on that.
I think that's a strong argument. I would say. Absolutely. If you want to deal with fireworks and there's a legitimate issue there, absolutely deal with fireworks. But don't threaten to cut off funding for every club because of the activities of a few yobs.
The commentary would include the Taoiseach and the Minister for Sport.
He was asked about that. He was saying, well, the Taoiseach, and he said, well, the Taoiseach is on the side of health and safety too. The other thing that was interesting in all of this is he did kind of double down this morning on News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. But he also... the text line afterwards, when they were reading it, now we all know text lines have loads of different things, but usually you try and give a flavour of what's coming in. We're really supportive of him. Not necessarily because of what he did, but what they said was it was refreshing and a breath of fresh air. These were the words that were being used to hear a politician take a stand and follow through and not cave. And that was what people liked about what he was saying. And I thought that was really interesting because we've often talked about people doing U-turns on things in politics. I don't know that doing a U-turn gains you respect, even if you're doing a U-turn maybe with good intentions. It was just really, I thought the text line response was really interesting.
He did cave. So the funding has been restored. By the end of the week, the funding has been restored, is the point.
By the way, like, was there ever any... Well, it was a kind of a hollow threat because there was no League of Ireland club looking for funding for their main pitches. There may have been...
There are some secondary pitches that are
which
going
were never
on. I think the six projects, two of which weren't actually made public. The one thing I would say is that it is like we've given ministers a lot of power to be able to essentially, I control the funding, and you better do everything that I say according to my rules.
I'm the strong man. Point. He actually started during the interview, his first interview with Dave McCullough. At one point, he started talking about, I'm not going to fund this. Or it's like, you're not writing the bills.
Our money.
It's our money, Minister. So anyway, look.
He's a winner in his book anyway.
Yeah, this is true.
And speaking of U-turns.
Do you have a sinner yourself?
It's my sinner this week. So obviously there is a wider discussion about the government and SNA allocations for this upcoming year. I know it's been in all the headlines this week that there's a lot of families around the country that fear there will not be a place for their students in the incoming year. It happens every single September, but particularly badly at this moment. And we've got Simon Harris saying, no, we're going to allocate all these classes. It's going to be great. I don't know where they're going from. That's a whole other issue. But my general sinner this week is, I think whenever we have these conversations, a lot of the time we often miss the fact that SNAs are class. Now I'm biased. My mother is one, and she has been for most of my life. But I just I look at the work that my mom and her unit does, because she's very fortunate to work in a unit in Cork that their school is very well set up for special needs classes, and they have a lot of resources and they have a lot of space for what they need to do, and the level of education there is brilliant and it's great to see, and I wish more schools could do the same. But I often hear, my mom and colleagues of hers talking about things like culturally what we think about teachers compared to what we think about SNAs, or the way that they're even the way the pay works, or different things like that, or the kind of ways that, especially in the summers, where teachers will do a certain amount of extra work for a certain pay, but it's not really the same for SNAs, but they're doing a lot of the work the same. It's all very messy, and I sometimes think we forget about the fact that SNAs are class, and I think that's a sin on behalf of all of us. My mother's patience, as evidenced of having the three of us, is very, very, very strong. But I went in one day with her. I think I was dropping her off and taking her car somewhere. So I dropped her off to work, and she was like, come on in and I'll show you the unit, I'll show you the school. The kids weren't in yet. And I was like, yeah, sure, cool, I'll have a look. Bring your daughter to work day. And we were walking around the school, and one of the kids had come in early. And for whatever reason, he was just really, one of his things at the time that he was fixated on was lunch. He always wanted to go on lunch. And if you couldn't go on lunch because it was 8:30 in the morning, he kind of had a bit of a freak out about it. And, my mom and all her colleagues are dealing with this as well. I burst into tears inexplicably. And mom's like, why are you crying? You have no need to be crying. And I was like, I had to be removed from the unit to stand outside.
You were put in the yard.
And the whole way home, I was put in the yard in the naughty corner. And the whole way home at the wall, as it used to be in my school, I drove home then, and I literally the whole way down was like, I don't know how I'm obviously in the right career, I should not be an SNA. I do not have the temperament for it. But I just think sometimes we lose that part of the conversation that SNAs are class. We could have a wider conversation about how nurses are class and all of these kind of other positions that are maybe sometimes overshadowed by the people that work in the same workplace as them. I just think we lose that sometimes. Up the SNAs.
Interesting.
That's kind of lovely.
Yeah. Interesting, because you raised something that I've been thinking a lot about during the week. And that is, I think we actually should have a debate, a national debate. And I hope it doesn't get lost in all this as what the role of SNAs should be, because it started out as one thing and I think it's evolved into something else. And listening to politicians during the week, I get the feeling many of them actually don't really understand the system as it is now. I think it used to be that they were assigned to one particular student. That's no longer the way. But and again, it was started out as more as a primary care function, and now it's evolved into more of an educational thing. So I think we need to have a debate.
Do you?
I do. Yeah.
I actually don't, because I don't think enough of us know enough about it. So my opinion on SNAs is ill-informed. So I don't know why.
When I say a national debate, I mean at Dáil Éireann, we need to have a debate as to and define exactly what the role of SNAs, because I think our policymakers don't actually know a lot of them.
And you may well be right on that, but I kind of feel like I would have had kids that would have used SNAs and resource teachers, because the whole family were all riddled with ADHD, to be honest. But anyway, so we would have benefited from SNAs over my children's education, and I think it'd be quite hard to define exactly what they do, because some kids need somebody with them one-to-one. Some kids need somebody with them the whole time. Some kids need...
That doesn't really happen anymore. SNAs are assigned to classes rather than...
But I think there are some kids who have one with them one-to-one because they have profounder needs. Yeah. But I think then there's some kids who get an hour here, an hour there, or in fact taken out sometimes even in groups and all sorts. And I think because, I think you probably need that flexibility because each child or school will have, even in any given year, will have different needs. But I also think they're classed, to be honest.
I do think you have to, I don't think you can have a category of people that are policymakers who provide funding to them don't actually know
what they do.
What they do, exactly. I don't think that's sustainable. I also, my other big fear is that there's been such a negative reaction to everything that has happened this week, and the communication was absolutely disastrous. Yeah. That future governments will now shy away from the whole redeployment issue, and like sometimes you do need to redeploy, and I'm afraid politicians are going to run scared.
How can
of that.
Our government spend so much money on special advisors and former people of this parish, media people, professional communicators, and communicate so poorly on things quite frequently?
The return on investment seems quite low. You would say, am I being polite?
I think you are under, do you know what I mean, though?
Micheál Martin said something extraordinary during the week, and he said, we didn't sign off on this review, which begs two questions. Why did you spend the previous week defending the review? And secondly, who's in charge? Because how can you have a review that the government doesn't sign? So who's actually run the country? They were the two questions that sprang to mind for me. I thought it was an extraordinary statement. I don't. What do you think, Saoirse?
Yeah, I think it's like when I was reading about a lot of this during the week, and like that, there's talk about the bridge appointment, there's talk about the letters, there's talk about all these things, and sometimes I feel like even outside of the kind of wider governmental position, outside of the actual SNAs themselves, there was something that a spokesperson had said, and I wish I could remember where it came from now, and it's lost on me, but a spokesperson had said that when you talk about school places and you talk about SNA allocation, you talk about classes and all of these kinds of things, you forget that also like there are families who have children where the children being at school is something that these parents desperately need, because it's like they have stressful enough lives as it is. If you've got a child with complex needs, your day to day is so stressful already. The last thing you need to be worrying about is will they go to school somewhere in September? And I think that also gets lost in the conversation a lot of the time because I just don't know how they're going to fix it.
We're going to have to pause it there for just a minute and take a short break, but we're going to be back with the winners and sinners in this room.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
And we are back with winners and sinners on this Friday afternoon here on The Hard Shoulder with Shane and Ciara. Saoirse, we're coming to the final furlong, as it used to be called on this show, in fact. What's your any other business for the evening?
My any other business is that this day next week, I will hopefully, please God, be in New York City on a little holiday, and I'm really stressed about it.
Have you deleted your social media first?
I actually was in the States last year and I did all of that. I deleted any tweets that had any reference to anybody who was of any particular
I, for one, welcome our new Republican
color.
Overlords.
I absolutely love Donald Trump, if you're listening. I used to live in New York, so I know it well, and I like it very much. But I'm going with my boyfriend, who's never been to America, never been to New York. So we have kind of a mixed itinerary of like, we should just walk around and soak up the vibes and it'd be gorgeous. But at the same time, we're only going for like 5 or 6 days. How on earth are we going to see everything? So I'm kind of stuck between being like, just go with the flow, it's fine. And then also being like, we should write down everything.
Is that because you feel responsible for his holiday because you're... You've been there.
I'm a native New Yorker from Cork. Yes,
you're a native New Corker.
I'm a New Corker, as they call us. I think it is a mix of that, because part of me just wants to be like, I need you to have the best time ever. I need you to see why it's the best city ever. It's going to be amazing. Best city ever, bar Cork. So I was like, you need to come and see it. It's going to be amazing. But I think also because I really love it there, and my time there was quite cut short because it was right before COVID. So the kind of beautiful long time I envisioned was actually like 3 or 4 months. So I have a lot of places I want to get back to and see again, and there's, you know, people I want to catch up with and all these things. But I also just kind of want to go and see what everything is. And
okay,
I was listing all the food.
Can I give you a bit of advice? Don't try and pack too much in.
But what if we come back and we say, God, we should have gone to
You know
that.
What? You,
you
got to
go again.
You can go again.
You're so right, guys. I'll just book that in.
We went to Paris last year as a family, and my son, he needs to see everything. We came back, myself and my wife came back from Paris. We were exhausted.
I remember that. You actually
were. Just wrecked. We covered, like, we did like 25,000 steps a day or something.
I'm just back from the same thing. But Bourdain said about Paris, walk a little, get lost a bit, eat and drink wine. Don't make any plans.
Yeah, see, that sounds pretty good.
Isn't that a wonderful... Do you know what? I thought you were going to say it, because why it it kind of resonated with me, the stress. It's not that. I am a brutal packer for holidays, and I cannot envisage in my brain what I'm going to do when I get there and therefore what I need. So I find it really hard to get things.
Kira's not a 10 kg kind of gal, let's put it that way. I've seen her in the airport.
Shane and I know each other very well. So I become absolutely overwhelmed with stress about how to logistically get myself there with things I'm going to need, so much so that I usually hit a point where I go, I don't want to go anymore, it's not worth it now. And I travel quite a lot because I actually love to travel, so that's a frequent enough feeling that I have. It's awful, but I'm with the lads, just chill and enjoy
even
it.
On the packing front, I stupidly did this thing where I was like, I'm off to America, anybody need anything? People were I want Tide pens, I want melatonin, I want this, and that's going to take up like a quarter of my 10 kg bag.
You are absolutely have to say to all those people, I am oversold. I oversold my friendship with you.
Yeah, I don't have the baggage space.
No.
You're any other business for this week?
I heard your cinema review, Scream 7, poo-pooing. I've seen it. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm up for it.
I suspect that a lot of the, not to cast any shadow or shade here, but I suspect a lot of the reviewers are watching with other reviewers in a darkened room on a Tuesday morning. I saw it in the cinema. The cinema was jammed. Most of the people there had been boozing, and Neve Campbell arrives on screen. It was great.
Ghostface.
Top fun.
In fairness,
exactly.
I did point out, if Neve Campbell is in it, it can't be bad.
It was very good. You've said that twice now this week.
What's happened to me this week is I've realized her name is Neve. I've been calling her Neve Campbell for
I would have thought it was a Neve.
About 20 years.
It's just the Irishness.
Do you not watch Party of Five? Was that
thought it was Neve. Yeah. I don't know. I'm with you though. I wasn't that snippy about it at all, because I am lowbrow to the core, and I'm very happy to go and get the popcorn, get the giant Diet Coke, and just enjoy the and not be kind of going, is this uncool? Am I uncool? You know, I don't have that at all. I don't give a monkey's.
It was actually like proper roller coaster. There was lots of screen. I was there with my teenager.
You didn't go with the kids,
we had a great time. My 14-year-old.
Wow.
That's who I'd go with. I'd go with the kids, and I know that they would enjoy it.
It's over 16, the thing.
So, you're soon to be 16, 14-year-old.
Strongly recommend.
It's a reminder of how fun it is.
If Patrick O'Sullivan's listening, you could be in trouble.
Never forgets.
He withdraw funding from cinemas.
They must all be punished.
Hang on now, we didn't say anything.
Or possibly radio stations in general.
All right, look, guys, as always, thank you indeed for that. Saoirse Hanley, features writer with the Irish Independent, Ger Gilroy of Off the Ball.
That is our lot, though, for the whole week here on The Hard Shoulder. Thank you all for listening. We do appreciate it every single week. And we will be back on The Hard Shoulder Monday, 4 p.m.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.